Welcome to Brain Sick, where we talk about sick brains. I'm Lydia.
I am Andrew.
My name's Alita.
And today we're going to talk about...
the sick brain of...
oh, thank you for that. Zelda Fitzgerald, which I'm actually super excited about. I didn't think I'd be this excited, but I am.
Ooh.
Not the mister. Not no. The one we all know and love.
Yeah, you're not gonna love him so much after this.
I was really actually Scott.
Yeah. Seriously, I got so upset when I was reading this. So when I was doing my research, and I actually, full disclosure, I kinda told Andrew some details just because I was so upset. I had to talk to someone about it. So we'll just start it. So she was born July 24th, 1900. So she was born on the beginning of the century.
Right. A new age.
All right, then.
So I just have a quick kind of summary that she was the wife of F. Scott Fitzgerald, Great Gatsby, that dude. You really can't talk about one without the other. Hmm. They're kind of one of those couples. She was extremely creative, had her own projects. She was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and she died as a patient in a fire at the hospital. And I also put so much drama. So this is probably going to be a longer episode. I kind of apologize, but also don't, because there's a lot. It's fun. It's exciting.
I'm excited.
And kind of...
because I don't... the most that I know of her is the portrayal from Midnight in Paris. That is honestly what I'm working with.
Same here. Which me and Andrew watched pretty recently.
Which is like, that's a quality film. It also has Gertrude Stein, who's a queer icon.
Hemingway.
Plug that.
Dolly. And a bunch of folks.
An icon.
Yeah, people should watch it. But is it an accurate
portrayal? That's what we're going to get into. So, let's just start real quick with her early life / background. So, she was the youngest of six kids. And they were all named after characters in these stories that
Nintendo.
Yes.
Right?
Okay. Obviously.
So she had Mario and Luigi were like the big bros.
Peach. Donkey Kong. The whole of course.
Ooh.
But they were really stories nobody knew. So it was kind of obscure. Mm. And she was spoiled by her mother, but neglected by her Supreme Court justice father in the state of Alabama.
Okay.
I have a question. Yeah. What was her maiden name?
I don't. I have the article up
Perfect.
Here. Zelda Sayre.
Sayre.
Sayre, S-A-Y-R-E.
I guess so.
Fun.
Cool.
Because I know her as Zelda Fitzgerald.
Right.
She was someone before he entered her life.
It's true. That's a good point to make. And she was very active as a child. She did dance and ballet, was very outdoorsy.
Nice.
Once she was in high school, she was described as bright, but uninterested in her lessons. So she was smart, she just didn't like going to school. She continued her ballet, which was a constant throughout her life, actually. She was actively social, drinking, smoking, and lots of time with the boys.
Ooh.
So she was a party girl. All
right.
And she was always looking for attention.
Mm-hmm.
And her behavior was shocking as a daughter of a prominent Southern family. But her dad's high status kind of protected her.
Right.
But people would look at her and be like...
she's wildin'.
Yeah.
She's going for it.
She did not give a fuck.
God damn.
Which is great. Live your best life.
For sure.
Oh, enter F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Okay.
Which will pretty much define the rest of her life. And she met him in 1918. This was so easy to keep track of her age.
She was 18 years old. Oh my gosh. Wow.
Just, it helped me out so much. so she met him when she was 18. He was volunteering for the army.
Okay.
And
how old was he? Is that?
Oh no! Don't ask me that. I don't know.
That's okay.
We'll do a quick look.
I'll continue.
Of course.
And so he talked to her about his grand plans to be a novelist. He would send her his writing. And he actually, while he was writing This Side of Paradise, which is when he met her, he redrafted one of his characters, Rosalind Connage, to resemble Zelda.
Oh.
He was so infatuated with her.
Oh.
Was it a a nice resemblance.
Yes. Yes. He was very in love with her.
Bitch.
Nah, he was trying to get her.
All right. Okay.
What did you ask?
Oh, how old he was.
Oh, did you figure it out?
Yes. So he was 22.
Okay. So not that much of a difference.
Yeah. 4 years.
Not bad.
Could be more drastic.
Yeah. And, okay, this is already kind of sketch, though. He used her personal diary verbatim in his novel.
Verbatim?
Yeah.
So he
lifted it, like, copied and pasted.
Ah.
Did he at least, like, MLA 8 cite her? I know. You know?
I actually, it doesn't seem like it. I'll get into it more later. She has a great quote. It didn't seem like she was a fan of it.
Mm.
And him and his friends, good old Scott and his friends, were actually talking about publishing her diary. And it was because her writing looked very similar to Emily Dickinson's writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very experimental. But yeah, they just wanted to publish it.
Just, yeah.
Like, yeah, that's great.
Cool.
Yes, solid.
Yeah. And so it seems like throughout this whole narrative, good old Scott is using all of, or he's, for a lot of his material, he's taking from mm-hmm. his encounters with Zelda, or what mm-hmm. she's writing, what she's saying.
So, like, an invasion of her privacy.
She's his muse.
Oh, well, when you put it like that.
Ugh. So there was this, you know, there's a... that scene in the Gatsby. We've all read the Gatsby and watched it. Have you watched it?
Yes.
Okay,
the Great Gatsby.
Yes. I'll just probably say Gatsby, but it's The Great Gatsby, which everyone had to read in high school. Okay. And there was that encounter between Jay Gatsby and Daisy Buchanan, or, yeah, okay.
With the linens?
I think so.
Hmm.
It might have been their first encounter ever, though. I'm trying to remember.
Oh, okay.
I think it was their first one.
So go back a bit.
Yeah. And so F. Scott Fitzgerald used him and Zelda's country club dance for that encounter mm-hmm. between Jay and Daisy.
Oh.
So Zelda, being the bright, beautiful young lady mm-hmm. she was, had lots of men chasing after her. And Scott was loving it. He wanted to win the prize.
Okay.
So he was enjoying the chase. He was sent north with the army, but then the armistice with Germany was signed, which ended the fighting.
Ooh.
So he got to go back to Zelda, and after that they were inseparable. And in his words, sexual recklessness. So that's great. We know what they were doing.
Good.
Lots of wholesome hand hugging.
Of course. What else would it be?
Uh-huh.
In March 1920, they were engaged. Zelda's side.
So it was 2 years after they met.
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting. And they said the country club dance was their first encounter. Not totally sure what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like sexual encounter or is it out in public encounter?
They're dancing.
I don't know. So, but anyway, Zelda's side did not approve of Scott's drinking or that he was Catholic. So there was two big issues they had, apparently. Okay, so marriage. After this side of paradise was accepted for publication, Zelda agreed to marry him once it was published. Mm. So that's a great way to start.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I'll only marry you if you're rich.
Yes.
And Scott saw it as the way to her heart. Not sure how to...
Dollar bill.
And
hey,
once...
she knows what she wants.
No, she does. At least she... Yeah. There's that. Once it was published, there was a quick rise to celebrity status. Everyone wanted to be near them. Everyone wanted to meet them. They were the life of the party. They were ordered to leave hotels because they were so drunk. Zelda jumped into the fountain at Union Square.
Oh my
god. Yeah, and there were lots and lots of alcohol.
Just general recklessness.
Yes, not just the sexual.
Not just the sexual.
But in every facet. So while they were having this very exciting outer persona of a life, on the inside they were very unhappy.
Sure.
There was a lot of fighting. and she found out she was pregnant in 1921. So that's a, you know, just keep it rolling. While Scott was writing The Beautiful and Damned, she gave birth to Francis, quote unquote, Scotty Fitzgerald. Okay. It's kind of cute.
Aww.
And there's a quote from Zelda when she was kind of coming out of the whole birth thing and that whole ordeal. She says, quote, oh God, oh, she says goofu. I'm not sure what that means.
Goofu?
Maybe she's trying to say like, God fucking damn. I don't know. Something like that. And she says, I'm drunk. Mark Twain. And then, isn't she smart? She has the hiccups. I hope it's beautiful and a fool. A beautiful little fool. Which sounds familiar, right?
Great Gatsby.
Yep, Daisy Buchanan. Oh my god. So goodness. He basically lifted that into his novel.
Wow. Don't know how I feel about that.
Right? It's kind of sketch. Zelda did not seem to take to mothering.
Sounds like Daisy.
Right? She was described as not the domestic type. Oh, and also I'm taking a lot of this from Wikipedia.
Sure.
Most of it. All of it.
Yes.
Just letting you know.
Okay.
Then she was pregnant again in 1922, but there was some suggestion that the baby was aborted. And I think it was through some writings, through some letters. And also...
not miscarried? Aborted?
Seems so. In Scott's book, which seems like it's just his life, that one of his characters aborted a baby, I believe. So that's why people think that's what happened.
I see.
But then... okay, so an interview Zelda had after The Beautiful and Damned was published. Here's the quote. It seems to me that on one page, I recognized a portion of an old diary of mine, which mysteriously disappeared shortly after my marriage. And... also, scraps of letters which, though considerably edited, sound to me vaguely familiar. In fact, Mr. Fitzgerald, I believe this is how he spells his name, seems to believe that plagiarism begins at home. Unquote.
Oh, shit.
And this gained a lot of traction.
I mean, I guess he knew that she would not...
you think.
Well,
sorry.
Yeah.
I, like... finished your thought in my head. That might not have been what you were gonna say. Please,
it's okay. He just didn't ever ask her, or you know, like, hey,
heads up,
have you ever, you know, maybe would it be okay if I
pilfered? Because
he knew that she wouldn't have said yes,
right?
So he just thought, I'll just do it anyways.
What's
how
and then
he...
she'll never know.
But how did he think she would never know if he is a published author and she is his wife who was like probably, it sounds like trying to be supportive. Like,
yeah.
Because it's either she reads his books and then finds out, which isn't good.
Right.
Or she doesn't read her own husband's books.
Which is also not good.
Also not good.
Yes. So like that was like his ideal situation though. Like she doesn't support him.
Mm.
She's too busy.
That's
partying,
not good.
You know.
Yeah, it's really sketchy. But after that interview, I guess she kind of got asked to do more interviews. She kind of gained some attention on her own.
Thunder.
Which is fine, right? Because it's her writing. So why shouldn't she? She began writing her own essays, short stories, and articles. And she actually wrote the play The Vegetables, which I am fat. Ooh. What is that about? I would love to know.
Throwback to Radiant Radish.
Vegetable. Oh, sorry, The Vegetable. Maybe I didn't type that right. It's one of the two.
That's something I want to know more about.
Yeah.
We can look into it.
Okay.
But she wrote it with her husband.
Okay.
And it flopped majorly.
Oh.
So they had to move back to Paris. And I don't know where they are right now. But
they had to move back. What a
terrible.
You have to go to Paris.
In 1924. So she's in her mid-20s right now. That's a lot. Just even though we're not even close to being through with this. And there's already so much that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a mass amount of stuff that happens in such a short period of time. It's crazy.
Goodness gracious.
So they relocated to the French Riviera, which sounds kind of nice. Then, while Scott was busy writing, it is so weird referring to him as Scott. It's always been F. Scott Fitzgerald.
What's the F?
Fitzgerald.
Yes.
I don't know. You can look.
It's all right. I don't care enough about him to.
I know. Figure it out. You'll get mad. This is when things really get. Yeah.
I'm ready to be upset.
Please, please.
I'm. Please in that be upset.
Okay. So while he was busy writing The Great Gatsby, Zelda fell in love with a young French pilot, Edward S. Okay, so it's spelled J-O-Z-A-N, and I looked this up right before, and it seems like you pronounce it Yozen.
Okay.
So I'm just going to go with that. I apologize if it's wrong. After 6 weeks of kind of hanging out with this guy.
Hanging out.
She asked Scott for a divorce. Yeah. And the thing is, Scott would get really enveloped or very hyper-focused on his writing. Right. So she would get very restless and she'd want attention and he wouldn't give it to her or he was just too busy. And so she just kind of was very frustrated.
She found it.
Elsewhere. She found another guy. And he at first wanted to confront the dude, but instead he locked her in the house until she just stopped asking.
That's healthy.
It's a way to do it.
How long did it take?
I actually don't know.
She it was know how long she was locked in there, you know?
It was long enough that Yozin didn't know she asked for a divorce. He left the Riviera, and they never saw each other again. Ooh. And apparently later in an interview, he said that any infidelity was imaginary. So it didn't seem like they didn't cheat. She didn't cheat on Scott, it seems like. She just wanted to be with this dude.
But she tried to do it the proper way.
Yeah, it seems so. He just locked her away. Just
turn this little.
And he reacted just as properly.
Just as proper. Yeah, she should have just like.
She should have just gone for it.
Booked it on the plane.
Seriously.
Mission Impossible.
It's bad. And then, so Scott writes about these lost illusions in the Gatsby, Great Gatsby, based on his lost certainty in Zelda and their relationship.
See, I wouldn't want to. If someone asked me for a divorce and locking someone who wants to get away from you in your house for the purposes of preserving a
your
union
marriage
doesn't seem like the best idea.
I agree.
Because it feels like you're making the problem worse.
Yeah.
You're emphasizing the reason they wanted to get away from you in the first place.
I mean, I guess you have the Stockholm syndrome angle at it. Where you try to really get in there.
Psychologically.
Yeah.
But,
which is also, I don't understand that at all. I don't know the psychology behind it enough. Mm-hmm. Behind Stockholm syndrome. Obviously, logically, it doesn't really make sense, but
it's not a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can talk about that another time.
It seems like a bit of a
control freak.
Thinking things through. That too.
Yeah. It seemed like he got really freaked out.
Right.
And very
protective. Can't run away if she's locked in his house.
Mm-hmm. But then he was very just. It struck him to his core. He felt like he couldn't trust her ever again.
Which is why you should let her go.
Yeah, you'd think. But they kept up their appearances. They looked happy to everyone else, which is just kind of the worst thing because you have such a disparity between who you are, what's actually happening in this front that you have to put up. That just sounds exhausting to me.
Yeah.
To pretend like you're still in love with your husband after he's locked you in the house.
And published your diary.
Yeah. Oh, keeps getting worse. Okay.
Cool.
Zelda overdosed on sleeping pills, but they never talked about it. Maybe a suicide attempt, but they refused to speak about it. Mm-hmm. But that is in their history. They traveled together, but they were both very unhealthy and very unhappy. And Scott is known for his alcohol, alcohol abuse, so that was definitely going on. And I think her mental illness was starting to ramp up. When, this was just an interesting detail, when he was naming The Great Gatsby, there were these other possible titles. There was Trimalchio in West Egg, Just Trimalchio, I don't know if I'm saying that right, Just Gatsby, The Gold, or Gold-Hatted Gatsby, The High-Bouncing Lover, but it was Zelda who preferred the ultimate title, which is The Great Gatsby.
Wow.
I never knew. While they were on a trip, I put this trip, I'm not sure which trip, she was sick and she started painting, I think because she couldn't do much. So that, there's a nice painting that I will post later of, it's a self-portrait. I'm not sure if it's during this time period, but it's very cool to see something that she's made.
Definitely.
And in 1925, they're back in Paris, and this is where Scott and the famous Ernest Hemingway become friends.
Ooh, all right.
So that really kicks things off. Zelda and Hemingway hate each other from the very beginning. Yeah. So that was accurate in Midnight in Paris.
Okay, cool.
And this is great. Zelda, oh, you're fine. Zelda said that Hemingway is a bogus, a fairy with hair on his chest, phony as a rubber check, and he just has a macho persona.
Phony as a rubber check, is
it? It's something to say. And Hemingway was just like, Zelda's crazy. So she had all these like quips. She was ready, and Hemingway's just like, eh, she's crazy.
Wow.
This was also really fucked. Scott had her tell Hemingway and his wife about the stuff that happened with Yosin at like a dinner party. He was like, tell them about when you cheated on me. I'm like, that's really nice.
Oof.
But at the very least, Hemingway introduced the Fitzgeralds to the Lost Generation community, which is Gertrude Stein. And I just wrote a quick from dictionary.com definition. The young adults of Europe and America during World War I, they were quote-unquote lost because after the war, many of them were disillusioned with the world in general and unwilling to move into a settled life.
Yes.
And Gertrude Stein is the one who's credited with this.
That's amazing.
Expression. Okay, this is actually really good. One of their worst fights, Zelda told Scott that their sex life was terrible because he was probably having an affair with Hemingway.
Alright,
So, Scott decides to prove he's a heterosexual.
Of course. Gotta flex that.
To have sex with a prostitute.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
That's the way to do it.
Female prostitute.
Yes. Ah. That's a very important thing to point out. You never know.
You never do know.
I don't know if that would really prove that he was straight.
Gonna prove how straight I am.
Okay, yeah, and so Zelda finds the condoms before anything happens, though.
Okay.
So it's like, were they just having unprotected? For a second, I was like, they had condoms back then?
Wait, yeah, actually.
I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Huh. And, okay, there was a bitter fight, lingering jealousy, just all bad. And actually, Zelda threw herself down marble stairs at a party because Scott ignored her while he was talking to another lady. Which is just
concerning.
Very.
Is she okay?
She seemed to be fine.
Yeah.
Physically yeah. As far as I can tell.
Like, she wasn't okay, but no, like, she didn't snap her neck.
I don't know. No. Okay.
She's thriving.
She's definitely living. I don't know about thriving.
She's surviving.
She's surviving. And I don't know, I just think of Scott, like, with a glass of wine in his hand and just completely being a dick, just ignoring her and being like, I'm not going to give you the satisfaction of my conversation. And then her just being so distraught, throwing herself down the stairs because it's like, my husband doesn't even look at me anymore.
And she also has that need for attention that you discussed, like, from a young age.
I kind of get, I more so way understand Zelda than I do Scott. He just came off as a major jerk this whole time I was studying this.
Yeah.
But
he definitely has his own story.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
At least from this perspective.
For sure. Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of
fair.
a lot of famous artists are kind of assholes.
It seems like it. It's a trend.
There's like, I don't know if it's like a narcissism that goes with it, but they're just very...
Picasso was a
bravado. Oh my god, don't get me started.
Yeah.
Not this time. Not this time. Okay, so then comes about more of that while Scott was writing. She was very restless, a lot of conflict, lots of interruptions, and Scott became severely alcoholic while Zelda was becoming increasingly erratic. Mm-hmm. But she wanted to have a talent completely of her own, so she kind of came back to the ballet, but she became completely obsessed. And also she was 27 at the time, which is late. Yeah. To be trying to be a professional ballet dancer.
Yeah.
So she definitely had skill, but Scott thought it was just a waste of time. And even though it was too late for her to be professional, she practiced up to 8 hours a day.
Oh, goodness. Oh.
Every day. And she was invited to a ballet school in Naples, but declined because I think she just wanted to be the best or to get to the stage. And... so that was the closest she was going to get, but she was like, that's not exactly right. What I want, so I'm just going to turn it down. I think that was the whole thing with that. And then in France, in spring of 1930, she was diagnosed schizophrenic, and she was admitted to a sanatorium.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, so that's, I guess that's when she was really displaying symptoms. It didn't specify which symptoms. But it must have been severe to get that. It kind of seemed like back then, anything they didn't know a lot about, and it was severe, they just schizophrenia.
Right.
I think it's the easy thing to slap onto it.
Yes.
So that's what happened with her. She went to a psychiatric facility on the shores of Lake Geneva, which sounds kind of pretty.
Yeah.
She was released in the fall of 1931. And then the Fitzgeralds moved back to Alabama where her father was dying.
Oh, goodness.
And that was a lot for her. And while they're there, Scott announces he's going to leave for Hollywood.
Ah.
So he leaves. And while he's gone, Zelda's father passes, of course. And she had another breakdown, basically. Because he was gone.
She had been hospitalized. Her father is dying and her husband leaves.
And then her father dies.
The father dies.
And then she goes back to a psychiatric clinic in 1932, early 1932.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot that happens in the course of a couple of years.
Yes.
And it just sounds like Scott was very out of it. He was not a part of her life at the end here. Let's see. Yeah. So when she was treated at the Johns Hopkins. I always wanted to say John Hopkins, but it's right? Johns.
And, okay, I looked into that. Little side note. Yeah. I thought it was, like, two people's last names, right? It was, like, Johns and, like, Hopkins. Like, it's strange that there's
an S multiple Johns?
John. But no, it's one man, and his name was Johns Hopkins, if I'm recalling correctly.
What names their kid Johns?
They just really...
Okay, well... You
know? Anyway...
Next week.
Yes, we'll update you. So she's treated there and she has this burst of creativity, which kind of tells me bipolar. She writes a novel over the course of her first 6 weeks at the clinic, which is insane. An entire novel in 6 weeks. It's taken me, I am like 11,000 words into mine, and it took me 2 years, 1.5 years or something. Anyway, yeah, so that's pretty intense. And she sends it to her husband's publisher. So Scott finally reads the book. I think they said finally, but I think it was a week after she sent it.
Finally.
It was a semi-autobiographical account of their marriage. And he, quote, berated her and fumed over the fact that the novel used material he was going to use in Tender is the Night, his own book, which he'd been working on for 4 years and was going to publish soon. And so he forced her to rewrite those sections in her book that overlapped with what he was going to use.
Wow.
Yeah. So there were, yeah.
But it's all right when he steals
her diary.
Her diary.
Word for word.
Yeah. Use her own part of their life. It's just, it's really, I don't, I just don't see why you have to do that, because...
He sounds really insecure.
Yes. Because if he didn't do that, then I assume is there maybe there is like an unedited, like, original transcript that we can read nowadays. Maybe
I hope so. Come
out, hopefully. Because like, if you have that, then like you have the kind of history of you literally get to see them both kind of using the same source material from their relationship in like the two different books. Like,
it reminds me of the Gospels and the Bible, because you have the same story, yeah, from four different perspectives.
Yeah, I mean, like it almost like adds value to both of them, because there's this kind of richness of background that mm-hmm. it's like a shame that he didn't let her for both of their own sakes, for the sake of the books.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is just so weird.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point. And like, yeah, it's strange that he felt as though he had ownership over
both their lives.
Yeah,
because he's the Mayan.
Yeah, kind of how it was.
He's Mr.
F. Scott Fitzgerald. I don't know what accent I was trying to do there. Scott Fitzgerald.
Fitzy. Remember my fish?
Is that a fish?
Fitzy. Yes, I had.
That's right.
Who was named after our beautiful man's F. Scott was Fitzgerald.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I read Great Gatsby and I was a fan.
Oh, no.
There was that shirt that you had that I would wear.
That's right. I remember.
I still have it in my closet.
Oh, my God. Was that from Hot Topic or something?
No. Maybe. I don't know. It's a shirt that has... The Great Gatsby, it's like a blue shirt, and it has the cover where it's like the one eye that's painted. It's a bit more abstract, because there's many editions out there. But yes, I had a beta fish that I named Fitzy.
Good fish.
After Fitzgerald and Fitzwilliam, who was a character in Pride and Prejudice.
All right, I was thinking Darcy. Just
fucking nerd.
No, it was great. I enjoyed it.
Anyway.
Oh, I thought you were going for a high five. I'm like, yeah. right. I forgot about him for a second.
Rest in peace.
For like a few years.
He was a lovely fish. I cried.
He jumped out.
Oh,
he did.
No.
And
you were just like
hysterical.
I had a
friend who the same thing happened to his beta fish.
Oh, my God.
They just have a... What's...
They want
Are we
to be
treating
free.
Them okay?
They're ready to fight.
Do they? Is this like a?
They will fight each other.
Yeah,
they'll kill each other.
Yeah, he jumped and I cried, and our brother had me and Lydia. Our brother Tim had to swoop in and scoop him up and throw him back in the water as I'm like blubbering. I'm like,
you didn't want to clean his bowl ever again.
I was so scared because I didn't want to touch him either to pick him up. I was like, He's slimy, he's moving, he's hopping around.
I don't know why. Is it because Dad wouldn't let you get a hamster or a lizard? Or why was it a fish? Why'd you get a fish?
I think I wanted a fish. I don't think I was interested in lizards yet.
Okay.
Right.
I still love lizards.
Yeah.
Someday.
Someday. When you move out of the house.
Soon.
Soon enough, hopefully.
Anyway.
Yes, I forgot how we got there, but that's okay.
It's all good.
Okay, so coming back to the rewrite.
Mm-hmm.
But in her book, there were, of course, obvious parallels to their marriage. But it was all about a woman who was separating her identity from her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And rising above being a backseat driver in her own life. There were a lot of verbal flourishes, complex metaphors, and it was deeply sensual.
Oh.
I really want to read this. It sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. But it was not very well received by critics at the time. It only sold 1,392 copies.
Okay.
Imagine having one of those copies.
I know.
Like, you found in, like, your grandma's attic.
Yeah. That would be so cool. No, it's crazy. There's that bookstore in downtown, Logos, and I found the coolest copy of Ben-Hur with illustration. Did I show it to you?
I believe you did.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was just donated. I was like, yes. Wow. It's beautiful. And I bet you just someone's grandpa died or some grandma, and then they just donated everything.
Yeah.
Used bookstores.
Oh, they're wonderful. Use that. Use any kind of store.
Yeah. Also, like, the thrift stores, too. The Gary Books.
Yeah. Yes.
Good selections all the time.
So, while her book was not very well received by critics, her husband also called her plagiaristic and a third-rate writer.
Oh, wow.
That's so crappy.
Fighting words.
That's so bad. The rest of her life was spent in various stages of mental distress. Some of her paintings were exhibited, but they were not well received.
Yeah.
She became violent and reclusive. She was not in a good place. So Scott put her in the Highland Hospital in Asheville, North Carolina. So they're back in the States. Oh, they have been back in the States.
Because he's been in Hollywood.
She was in Alabama. They were in Alabama. Yes.
Alabama.
Yeah. And he wrote to his friends. He wrote a lot of letters about Zelda and their relationship.
Interesting.
So he wrote to his friends, Zelda now claims to be in direct contact with Christ, William the Conqueror, Mary Stuart, Apollo, and all the stock paraphernalia of insane asylum jokes. For what she has really suffered, there is never a sober night that I do not pay a stark tribute of an hour to in the darkness. I don't know if that's right. In an odd way, perhaps incredible to you, she was always my child. It was not reciprocal, as it often is in marriages. I guess just like he had to take care of her. I was
her
great reality, often the only liaison?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Liaison agent French who could make the world tangible. Why do they have to make everything so hard? Make the world tangible to her. So he credited himself with keeping her sane.
Yes.
Even though he probably is the one who led her to insanity.
Good luck, honey. I'm going to Hollywood.
Take care of yourself.
Locking her up in the house.
Yeah, you can't leave. And she remained in the hospital while Scott returned to Hollywood for a job.
Yep.
And while he was in Hollywood, he had a serious affair with a lady. Which is great. It's so great that
it's
he wasn't.
Great because it proves that he isn't gay.
Yeah, he finally.
He's not gay.
All her fears are relieved.
Yes.
He is, in fact, a hetero male.
I'm sure it brought her great relief.
Mm-hmm.
He was bitter and burnt out. And when their daughter, Scotty, was thrown out of her boarding school, Scott blamed Zelda for it, that she was not a good mother.
So how did their kid feel about him calling her his kid? So was she sisters?
What?
With their kid?
Oh, you're talking about him calling Zelda.
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't want to get into that.
Okay.
I'm
hung up on that one. That's just me.
How was their daughter taken care of throughout all of this?
Like, I honestly don't know.
Because it doesn't sound like either of them were
around.
Well, yeah, it doesn't sound like Zelda was in a state to be taken care of. She couldn't take care of herself, let alone a child.
Which is one of my worst fears, honestly. Is if I have a kid, yeah.
To take care of your own child. Yeah, because that is a huge responsibility. Like, even if you're, like, neurotypical and, well, who is? But even if you are, like, neurotypical.
If you don't have a psychiatric disorder.
Yeah, like, if you don't got something.
I mean, she was 21
going on
when she had her.
Yeah, that's young. Right. Like, it's still difficult as hell to raise a child, to build family, whatever. And you throw in all these additional crazy factors she's living with. And
I'm sure with the money, they were hiring tutors and the like.
Or I mean, she was at home.
There's this own problem of, like, them not being there, even if they're other people provide for them.
But, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
There's a quote from her later that I'll read.
Ooh.
But, okay, Scott's having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
Daughter's thrown out. Scott blames Zelda. And he resented her for ruining him and cheating him of his dream. So that's fun. He just blamed her for...
What was his dream?
To be
not be a drunken loser. To be stupid. I think he thought he had a lot more writing in him, but it was because he was so sidetracked by her mental illness and her distracting him and all this stuff, that he wasn't able to reach his full potential. And he was actually really pissed that he was kind of fading into obscurity while Hemingway, his bro, was catapulted into success.
Yeah.
So he was pretty pissed about that. Nice. That insecurity just mounting.
Yeah. And... he's not the best guy.
No.
Also, Ernest Hemingway was a little fucked up in the mind department, too.
Oh, definitely. I mean, he shot himself, right?
I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure he shot himself.
You've read Old Man of the Sea, it's just like, what the hell is going on? I can only get through like
5 pages of it.
I had to read it in, I want to say, 10th or 11th grade.
Huh.
I believe so. And it was terrible. Dark. I mean, I also find his writing to be quite dense, so.
I read half of Sun Also Rises.
Uh-huh.
And that was where it stopped.
Yeah, I tried.
I was a teenager, yeah, so maybe you can go back and appreciate it more as an oldster. But
I don't know. I tried reading Old Man of the Sea last year, and I could not do it. Yeah. This is the girl who's read Gone with the Wind, and...
You really stuck with that. That was incredible.
I did.
Yeah.
It was so good, too. At some points, it was just like a page-turner. I couldn't stop reading it, so I really enjoyed it. I could not stand Scarlett O'Hara for the first... actually the entirety of the book, but it's kind of cool because she uses someone who you hate as the main character, which is, it was really good.
Yeah.
I'm getting off track, but...
sort of book club.
Okay. We should, or at least just have an episode.
Yeah.
Okay, so things are just going downhill for Scott on his end, too. He had a drunken fight with his mistress. Poor guy. He had to return home, and Zelda was gonna go on a trip to Cuba with her pals from, I don't know if they're with the hospital, but she didn't go, so he decided to take her instead, which I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of cute, but it was terrible. It was disastrous.
Oh, no.
Scott was so beaten up and intoxicated by the end of it, he had to go to the hospital.
Oh, no.
And... they actually never saw each other again.
Oh, this. Wow.
Mm.
Because Scott goes back to Hollywood and to his lady, and Zelda goes back into the hospital.
Wow.
4 years later, she progressed and was released in the spring of 1940. So
she was in the hospital for four years.
And Scott's in Hollywood for 4 years without seeing his wife.
Wow.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. I can't imagine being... 4 years.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, this is in the 30s now. It's not pretty. Like, psych wards are not pretty back then. So,
still not pretty.
No, they're not. And her being famous probably helped her situation, but even then, it was not, they didn't know what they were doing.
Of course.
And it was so overcrowded and all those things. So, it's pretty rough. When she came out, though, her friends were long gone. She didn't have much money, and Scott was, you know, upset about everything.
Of course.
They actually wrote each other letters, it seems, until he died in December. Scott dies in December.
Oh, wow.
And he had a heart attack. And I believe his mistress found him. And then she actually goes on to write a book about their affair.
Oh.
And it turned into a best, like...
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then it turned into a film.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so she got rich. This is
insane. Sugar daddy from the grave. That's all I'll say about that. I need to find me an F. Scott Fitzgerald. All right. What?
Oh, no.
Damn. Yeah, I stand by what I just said.
I'm too tired for this. Okay, he dies. Zelda can't attend the funeral. I don't know what it meant by can't.
Sure.
But she just didn't.
She cannot.
She could not.
So she just didn't want to.
Probably.
Maybe.
But then that's fine. I don't blame her.
Yeah, it's okay.
Sorry, I'm a busy.
I have things to do.
I just cannot.
Not right now.
My schedule
does not allow. So actually, Scott was finishing The Last Tycoon, okay. or it was an unfinished manuscript, so okay. I don't know where he was in it, but he never finished it, and she read it, which prompted her to begin her own novel, yeah. Caesar's Things, which she never finished either.
Oh, no.
Yeah, she missed her daughter's wedding, and they kind of made it sound like she chose not to go, because she didn't want to be out in public, maybe.
Sure, because she, like, felt like a mess that she didn't want to, like...
Maybe,
like...
Yeah,
uncomfortable. I don't want them to see me like this kind of thing.
Potentially.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it could have been a lot of things. She returned to Highland Hospital in 1943. She was working on that novel, kind of checking in and out of the hospital.
Wow.
But on March 10th, 1948, so she was in the hospital for another 5 years straight, it seems like.
Dang.
And a fire broke out, and she was locked in a room waiting for electroshock therapy.
Ah.
So she died.
Wow.
ECT.
Which is what we now call electroconvulsive therapy.
Mm.
And I think we talked about it with Van Gogh.
We did, yes.
He also had it. But this was even earlier. No, later. Sorry. Yes. Whoa.
That's all right. I honestly don't... When was Van...
He was like end of 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was born. And then all this
happened.
Yes.
But there's been like a slow, like... Very slow progression with the electrotherapy.
Oh, yeah. It was horrifying.
It was just full-on seizure, right? Mm-hmm.
So they probably had similar experiences despite the difference in time.
Why not so much? Because I remember, like, it used to, especially, like, in the 1800s, like, people would be, like, cracking their teeth.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
They didn't have any muscle relaxant or anything. Yeah. Which they do now.
It's very different.
Yeah.
It's just, like, a seizure, like, of the brain, right?
That's what, that's the essence.
It's, like, targeted now with electrodes, but then it just used to run the current through you.
I think, before it was just on both sides, and they would just go... Nowadays, because I had to do electroconvulsive therapy for a bit after my manic episode, and it was... usually, they put electrodes just on one side, and so it would... Yeah, it wouldn't be all at once. They knock you out. They give you a muscle relaxant, and it's very... contained and more directed, and they kind of know more what they're doing. So,
which is good.
Yeah, we can always talk about that later too.
Sure.
But so I mean, it just kind of shows where she was, that she was in a place she needed that, which I hope that was something she chose to do. I don't know. Anyway, their daughter wrote this after their deaths. Quote: I think, short of documentary evidence to the contrary, that if people are not crazy, they get themselves out of? Wait. Let me double check this quote.
Go for it.
It says out of, but I think it's... Okay. Let me reread this. I got it right. Quote. I think, short of documentary evidence to the contrary, that if people are not crazy, they get themselves out of crazy situations. So I've never been able to buy the notion that it was my father's drinking which led her to the sanatorium. Nor do I think she led him to the drinking.
So this is their daughter speaking?
Okay. After they're both passed away.
Okay.
They were buried in Rockville, Maryland, but then reburied with the other Fitzgeralds at St. Mary's Catholic Cemetery, inscribed with the last sentence of The Great Gatsby. So we beat on boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into the past. Which is kind of beautiful. There's a picture of the gravestone right there. Yeah. Oh, they ended up buried together.
Interesting. You did say they were an inseparable pair.
Yeah. So, after their deaths... It kind of seemed like there wasn't much interest in them when they died, but the years after, there was a screenwriter who knew both of them, and he wrote The Disenchanted. Scott was viewed as a fascinating failure, while Zelda's mental illness was largely blamed onto that failure. So it created this narrative.
And dramatized it as like, yeah.
It was this
That's...
author and... his demise.
It was his crazy wife.
Yeah.
It was like his burden. it's weird that, like, that feels like it kind of persists talking about him the way that he comes up.
Just general knowledge.
Like we all read Gatsby in school. Yes. And it wasn't, like, part of the curriculum or anything, but I kind of remember getting into a bit of who he was for the context of it, and that all I really remember is him being, like, some drunkard stumbling around Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Is, like, my impression. Maybe the whole having the wife who was this out of control, exuberant gal that he was chasing around. But it's just, I mean, I guess it's just so reduced what we hear about him. Definitely. Versus kind of the muddy truth of it all.
Mm.
Is there something you wanted to add?
I really do think my main point of reference for Midnight both of them is Midnight in Paris, and I feel like there's like something deeply poignant in that. I remember both of them were portrayed as very outgoing and like lives of the party, and they especially Zelda, she like is speaking with the main character, and I don't know, she's very happy and excited. But then later on in the evening, like, she says that she wants to kill herself.
Yeah,
she tries to throw herself into the canal. I mean, like, I feel like she was very humanized, but then like Scott was a little whitewashed.
Oh, he's white.
Like he was absolved of his wrong doings.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Like
I don't think that's the right term, but
he's a little okay. No, yeah, continue.
Like they never mentioned any kind of.
He was completely lucid.
Bad behavior. Yes. Yeah, he was just
he's
like.
He's portrayed as like, oh, he was just like partying. Like,
not even. He seemed kind of, like when he.
You guys saw more. Recently.
There was like him being like conflicted over
Zelda,
wanting to like watch over Zelda, but none of this like. Very like control freak behavior, or like the super drunk, out of control. Yeah, that.
I mean,
that
he was Tom Hiddleston
portrayed.
Played him, so yeah. Everyone loves him. Yeah, which is fine, but I think that kind of carried over into the character. And I remember a point that I wanted to make was when she wanted to throw herself in the canal, and Owen Wilson's character comes up and he's like, no, Scott only loves you. You trust me. But I'm like, that doesn't seem to be true.
Weird.
Because he had this affair.
That would have been pre-affair in the timeline.
But then Owen Wilson's character should have known, right? Because he's from the future.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that's also indicative of how his knowledge of their lives was shallow and
maybe
and was this this very like glorified, like romanticized version of like oh, like they were inseparable, they were perfect for each other, they were both so in love with each other despite the inner demons that like hounded Zelda and
I guess in a way that kind of plays into the theme of his character
he's very romantic,
like caught in the nostalgia of a time that never was his kind of thing. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I wonder if the dwarf Woody Allen knew that, or if he just full-on was like,
it's convenient.
It is.
Yeah. Woody Allen's, like, he's, like, rolling into stacks of cash as we're, like, debating, like, the minuscule details of his film.
I'm sure that's how it plays out.
Yeah. He's having a time.
Oh, of course. So we have Scott, who's, you know, the failed genius, but... You know,
because of his crazy wife.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Broadway play based on that book.
Oh,
which was
the one
that
she wrote?
No, the Disenchanted, the playwright.
He wrote about both of them.
Yes, after their death.
Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then this is when F. Scott Fitzgerald's mistress published her memoir called Beloved Infidel. I always want to add the, but it's just Beloved Infidel. and then bestseller, later film, and Scott was definitely seen as more sympathetic. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like his wife was holding him back.
Right.
And I mean, this is from his mistress, so that's fun.
I'm sure we can try that. It's just like such, it's weird how, again, like it kind of, his portrayal is kind of like, kind of reaffirms like that idea of his. It's just, it's like, it's her fault. Like, mm-hmm. he blamed her. And like that, then that idea is what kind of spread. Mm-hmm. It's just such a pussy move to
blame
the woman.
Tell how it
is. Yeah, no, definitely.
It's interesting.
It's easy.
It's an easy out.
In our society, and especially given the time period they were in. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you have, this is close to the era of, or maybe even during, I can't recall details, but like female hysteria.
Hysteria, that's a whole thing.
Yeah, like hysterectomy, the root of that word is mm-hmm. hysteria, because they thought removing women's uteruses would somehow stop their crazy from coming out. And it also just makes me think of how in literature, like, classically, like the woman in Of Mice and Men, or mm-hmm. like Lady Macbeth in Macbeth. Mm-hmm. Like, for some reason, these are the two examples that are coming to mind. They're both portrayed as like evil, quotation mm-hmm. marks, evil women, or like
who influence the dude.
Who influence the men in some way.
In Mice and Men, the lady who gives them the mice?
Not so much. I think more like Lady Macbeth. She's more manipulative. Yeah.
She's like more, super villain.
Yeah. With the Of Mice and Men, I was
the redhead,
more,
right?
Yeah, the redhead.
Yeah, she was kind of like a... She was a privilege.
She's seductive. Yeah.
She pushed Lenny, right?
Kind of. Well, he ends up killing her.
Right, but I think it's because she was coming on to him.
Yes, because she was looking for attention anywhere she could find it. Anyway, the point is, like, there's only a couple few ways that women, like, were characterized in mm-hmm. literature and things like that, and that is, like, the evil woman, or, like, the seductive woman, or, like, the really vanilla, just, like, good housewife. Mm-hmm. Like, and those...
Is that, like, Gone with the Wind, or, like, no. Jane Austen novels, or those kinds of things? I mean, that's written by a lady, but...
I think those were... good, unique examples of women who are more multi, who are more complex.
Were those competing with the other literature of the day, or have these kind of been, were these like rediscovered kinds of classics that we have now?
I'm honestly not sure. Okay. I'm somewhat speaking out of my ass, I gotta be honest. It's just,
I mean, I think when we look back, that's what we can pull from it, but mm-hmm. I know Jane Austen was just like totally smashing those stereotypes.
Yeah. Which is also, you probably partially attributed to the fact that it was a female author, not a male author.
Right.
A lot of our history is written by males. That's a whole nother thing.
Okay.
We're kind of just diving off the deep end.
We are. I think we're all a little wiped. So this is a bit rambly, but that's okay.
But no, I always love discussing the patriarchy and men. And there's nothing, I don't have anything against them. I think they're great. I support them full-heartedly. There's an undeniable history behind the oppression of women, and like the characterization of women as evil or lesser than men. So I think that is interesting to consider and could play into how we view the Fitzgeralds
today. Least until Zelda, a biography that was written by Nancy Milford, who was a grad student. And it was the first in-depth look into Zelda's life, which is fantastic, and written by a woman. Zelda was viewed as an artist whose talents were belittled by a controlling husband. So that is, which I think is more accurate than definitely was before, making her an icon of the feminist movement in the 70s. So I think that's about when it was written. Okay. She was dramatized. It was really cool because it just kind of, the references were rolling at this point.
Mm-hmm.
She was dramatized in Tennessee Williams' Clothes for a Summer Hotel. I think he's the one who wrote Glass Menagerie?
The name sounds very familiar, yes.
One of those plays. She was described as one of the epitomes of the Jazz Age's glorification of youth, representatives of the lost generation, and she's a parable about the pitfalls of too much success.
Mm-hmm.
Zelda was an inspiration for the song Witchy Woman by the Eagles. I should look up the lyrics. I don't know what the lyrics are.
I definitely listened to that song.
Oh, before. Really?
Yeah.
That's fun.
A little bit of an Eagles
face. And like you brought up before, the inspiration for Princess Zelda of The Legend of Zelda was Zelda Fitzgerald. The co-creator says, Fitzgerald was a famous and beautiful woman from all accounts, and I like the sound of her name. So I took the liberty of using her name for the very first Zelda title.
Yeah, that's
which
cool.
is awesome. Because I was thinking about that the whole time I was reading about it. I'm like, is it? So it is.
Yeah, so like the only other Zelda I've ever seen was a restaurant in Capitola, but like that name has never shown up anywhere in my life other than
it's such an exotic sounding name.
Yeah.
It really is. It's gorgeous.
It is. It's very pretty. And very unique, mm-hmm. but not too out there. It's a nice name. There was a resident wild turkey they named Zelda in Manhattan. Because there was a story of Zelda Fitzgerald wandering and being found in Battery Park during a nervous breakdown.
Oh.
Mm, poor lady. Now she's
reincarnated
seen
as a turkey.
Yeah. Oh. I don't know if he's still... She... I don't know why I said he... I mean, maybe. Zelda. You never know. Still kicking her nut. And now she is seen as a cultural icon, like Marilyn Monroe and Princess Diana. So she got catapulted into... posthumous fame,
mm-hmm.
which is cool because it didn't seem like she got a lot of respect in her life.
Mm-hmm.
So at least after her death, she can be recognized more.
Yeah, and now like when like you look this stuff up today, you see everything. It's not that like disenchanted or that kind of thing. Yeah,
and scholars and critics actually started looking at her writing and her works as it was, not just a supplement to her husband's work.
Right.
Wow. Cool.
So I really want to read that book.
Definitely.
And I also pulled... There was a 1996 New York Times article, and I resent the title of this, but it was called How Crazy Was Zelda? Which, I know we use the word crazy, but that's... I feel like somehow in that, you know, it's in 96, it's published, it sounds very derogatory. But the author's note is that Zelda's spending sprees, her passionate love of life and intense social relationships, her melancholic response to disappointment, and the relatively late onset of her illness point toward a mood disorder, as does the alternation between frank psychosis and a sparkling, provocative personality.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds very much like bipolar disorder. These are just some excerpts I took that F. Scott Fitzgerald wrote to a doctor, which provides some insights about her mental illness. So I'll just read these. She has absolutely no sense about money, though she is not particularly self-indulgent. She can't stand criticism. She hasn't the patience to revise. She has no conception of how fast the world slips from under one's feet. There is the nervous strain of the work itself, the nervous strain of recapitulating old agonies best forgotten, and the inefficient technique predicating years to perfect, which kills most of what she writes, and the melancholia depending on unfavorable reception of her work by critics. I would rather have Zelda a sane mystic than a mad realist, or as I expressed it in my book, he's just gonna quote himself, better a sane crook than a mad Puritan. If she were an antisocial person who did not want to face life and pull her own weight, that would be one story. But her passionate love of life and her absolute inability to meet it seems so tragic that sometimes it is scarcely to be endured. I have just fully realized that her brother was not a schizophrenic, but a manic depressive. There it is. That, in fact, the hospital in which he died simply characterized his condition as depressed, though he had touches of suicidal and homicidal mania. So it does sound like bipolar disorder ran in the family.
Yeah.
which I, from what we've read and what my research, it's seen, I would probably call it
bipolar disorder. It seems like, because there's not much of like a hallucination that you get with this,
which you can even get with mania. Mm-hmm.
Yes, they mentioned psychosis. Is there more details on that?
I didn't see any.
Yeah, that's okay.
But I think what tipped me off definitely was writing a novel in 6 weeks.
Right.
You don't just do that. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's Miss Zelda Fitzgerald.
Oh.
Yeah, she kind of got screwed.
Royally screwed.
Royally screwed. Royally screwed. Don't marry for money.
Fame. Yeah.
Or fame. Or just because he's cute.
I don't know. Those are some good reasons. Those are some good reasons.
He's cute and rich, and you're going to Paris.
I mean, I don't know. I kind of don't blame her.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Good job, Zelda. Woo! Picking a good one.
Get it, girl?
Ooh.
I'm just really pissed about the whole Yozin thing.
Because
She wanted to leave. He didn't let her. Then he shamed her for it. And then...
Probably, like, with their friends at a
party. Yeah, what the... And had her explain the whole thing.
And then went and did his own.
Yeah.
Yeah, what kind of morally uprighteous person? Who do you think
And then using
are?
Her own writing for his book.
See, that really gets me because I love the idea of taking something from your life in that such a personal way. See, this is from his wife's life, so spare me the second, but like I like the idea of taking your personal experiences, the things that are really like close to you, close to somebody real,
yeah,
and putting that into the art, because like you're pouring the soul into it.
Yeah
you're channeling that,
and I think that's probably a lot of why his books are so revered today. Definitely. Is because it's got this just real nasty touch to it. But you know, it's almost like he like stole her soul and put it in his books.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
it's a really good way to put it.
Yeah. And when also the part where he made her rewrite her own book.
I hope the original is published somewhere by now.
Yes.
I would love to read that version. I just can't. The more, because I came into it thinking, okay, F. Scott Fitzgerald, I love this guy. Like, Gatsby is one of my favorite books and all this stuff. And I don't think that's going to change because Larry Gatsby, you know, regardless, an amazing book.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing all of this has painted a completely different picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which it seems to kind of be what we're discovering as we do these, which is cool because
definitely.
I feel like I never would have looked this up otherwise.
Definitely. Yeah. Especially with the Beach Boys. I would not know.
That was so much that I had no idea.
Radiant Radish.
Oh, I want to make t-shirts or something.
Please do.
Radiant Radish.
I have an image in my mind. It's like a red background with like yellow and orange, like kind of like sunburst, like lines radiating out. It says, like, the Radiant Radish.
They must have had one, too, for the actual story.
With a radish right there.
See, I totally
I'll
just...
I'll do a little sketch for you.
I totally just imagine...
Tubular turnip.
Oh.
Tubular. That's, I was saying that earlier, and my friend was like, I hate that. Stop saying that. Like, disgusting. And I was like, tubular.
What were you saying?
Oh, I was saying when I thought Radiant Radish, I thought of a white t-shirt and then just a radish with a smiley face on it.
Mm.
But like the smile's bigger than, like wider than the actual.
Yeah.
That's a mental image I will not forget.
Yes. Anyway. Yeah, so I mean, you know, I feel bad. At the very least, she gained recognition after her death. Just sounded really rough.
She's gorgeous.
I know. Oh. There's a self-portrait.
Oh, probably painted in the early 1940s.
Okay, so that's later than I thought.
Yeah. Which is all right.
I'll probably post that too.
Side profile.
Yeah, so it's sad. It's very unfortunate. But But she definitely has made a legacy. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty cool. At least there's that. So, yeah, I think...
I feel like we're just kind of rambling on now.
Yeah. I feel like we're kind of tired.
It's been good.
She lived through some really significant, like, historical events as well. Like, both of the world wars.
Yeah. That's a hell of a generation.
It was very formative for our culture now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
I love the 20s. I really, I think a lot of it came from Midnight in Paris, but I just, the style, the fashion, everything was really, and kind of, like the sex is like more on the open, all the alcohol, just like really pushing the boundaries.
It's a very,
culture is thriving.
Very. So,
All right.
So, who's Andrew's next?
I'm next.
Who are you doing?
I'm going to do Howard Hughes.
The Boeing guy.
The Boeing guy. He's also a movie guy, too.
Really?
Yes.
Oh. Okay, anyway.
But yeah, he's kind of an entrepreneur. Another, like...
Is he still alive?
A bit of a rich, out-of-control fella. Seems to be a bit of a pattern here.
Running theme.
Yeah. Handsome devil. Ooh. So we'll see. We'll see. We'll get there. It should be good.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Well, then, I guess we'll sign up for now.
All right.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Follow us on Instagram, brainsick.podcast.
Yes.
We'll be on YouTube. We'll be on Facebook.
Yes.
Spotify?
Maybe.
Someone's been asking me about that.
Oh, okay. We'll have to look into that.
Yes.
And I think we have to submit it to them, too.
Okay.
We'll do it all.
It's on SoundCloud, too.
SoundCloud. There we go.
So we'll get it out there.
The platform of preference.
Yes.
And you can also email us if you have any ideas. We have an email at...
thebrainsickpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes.
Yes.
So, you know, I feel like...
Send us
any notes,
your letters.
Any...
Mm-hmm. Just like F. Scott and Zelda.
Whatever. Anything you want to get off your chest, we
go
are
go for
here.
It.
At the Brain Sick Podcast at Gmail.
Please be nice.
You can be mean.
Please be nice.
I'll try not to take
it
personally.
Well, be nice generally. Just be a nice person.
Yeah. Advice to live by.
Don't steal people's diaries.
Don't publish it against their will or knowledge.
Go eat some radishes.
Become radiant.
It's good for your skin.
Is it?
Yes.
Well, you got me.
That's it for this week.
Okay. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.